It's my pleasure to introduce Lord Mayor of Oxford, who was born in Sydney, Australia. He studied chemical engineering and theoretical physics. He developed an interest in animal population dynamics early in his career, and he made major advances in the field of population biology, the study of disease, and of biodiversity through the application of mathematical techniques. He's a professor in the University of Oxford, and he's held professorial posts both at Princeton in the USA, Imperial College London. He was appointed Chief Scientific Advisor to the UK government, and he was elected President of the Royal Society. And he is also a member of the House of Lords. So who better to speak on what advice can science deliver to policymakers? Lord May, please welcome.
I believe I've turned on my microphone. Yep, very good. I want to say it is a tremendous pleasure to be here celebrating the 10th anniversary of the European Academy's Science Advisory Council. I have very clear and happy, if sometimes complicated, memories of the foundation and the founding events 10 years ago. And it is just so nice to see it having done so well. It is so important. Humanities, we are different from the other animals with which we share this planet, in that we have always sought to understand the world around us and our place in it. The beginnings of that are lost in the mists of time. Enigmatic paintings in caves in Altamira, stone circles. As this intellectual adventure has advanced, often two steps forward and one step back, it has become more systematically organized, more methodologically experimental, particularly over the last three centuries. And all the great German Lander academies were, unfortunately, in a sense, founded a century before Bismarck. But now that has been put in place so that Germany takes its full place without us having to do a little contortion to decide who is Germany, who must have, of course, a major part in the international councils. All this knowledge has been applied to make life better. You can document this in many different ways, but there's one dramatic one. We can't relate intuitively to the notion that 50 years ago the average life expectancy of a child born on this planet was 46 years, because 50 years ago the difference between the developed world and the developing world at birth was 26 years. Today it is a still shameful 12 years. We've made life better in that we have doubled food production over the last 30, 40 years on only 10% more land. But another way of looking at this, the unintended consequences of well-intended and beneficial actions, have us moving to a state where over the last 150 years, since Darwin published The Origin of Species, humanity has increased sevenfold, and even more remarkable, the average ecological impact of the average inhabitant has increased sevenfold. The energy consumed by the average human, with huge variations among countries, has increased sevenfold in that same interval for a 50-fold increase in our impact. And one necessarily imprecise way of quantifying that is this assessment a few years back, and I apologize, it's not the most up-to-date, by the World Wildlife Fund, WWF, of the total impact of humanity as against the estimated sustainable capacity of the planet. Now, you can't take the intersection between them too seriously because a lot of this is very rough, but a lot of the errors cancel, and it's probably not beyond being correct by more than 20 years or so, one way or the other, so that we today face a choice more remarkable than any previous generation has faced. It is essentially a question of how do we choose tomorrow instead of just letting it happen? How do we make tomorrow in the face of the problems that the unintended consequences of well-intentioned applications of our knowledge have made on the environment? Changing the climate as we burn 1 million years worth of fossil fuel, 1 million years worth of carbon deposits each year, as our demand for water, 2/3 of it for food, is set to intercept the sustainable supply somewhere in the middle of this century, as our impact on ecosystem services and extinction of species, which has accelerated the extinction rate, if the ones we know well, like birds and mammals, are representative of others, to a rate of acceleration last seen in the big five episodes of mass extinction, environmental impact. Problems more local of health and safety. Are there credible worries about nanotechnology? Has Prince Charles in Britain very excited? Is there any credible foundation in some of the less extreme of the worries? Should we really be as concerned as many parents are in an age when it no longer seems that you have to have the child vaccinated because there doesn't seem to be much mortality of childhood infection, and yet that forgetting that my grandmother lost 3 of her 11 siblings before the age of 10, forgetting that is giving us new problems. Some of the problems are ethical problems. What should we allow stem cell research? Should the research that gave us in vitro fertilization be illegal? And what about the ethics of declaring it illegal but welcoming the products? It's interesting ethical dilemmas in some countries. Some blend both GM crops, which raise both for many ethical and safety issues. How do we go about doing it? And that was at the origins of the formation of EASAC. Ideally, what we wish to do is have science advice set the stage, telling us what is possible, what is not possible, what are the credible worries, what we might be able to do, and what is just cloud cuckoo land. And on that stage, thus set by science advice and constrained by scientific uncertainties, we act out the democratic process of debate and choice. That's the ideal. That ideal is actually set out by the United Kingdom in 1996 in a set of guidelines for science advice in policy making, with the explicit idea that this was not telling us what to do, it was telling us how to frame the debate more accurately. And it said, whatever these things, whether they're health and safety, whether they're ethics, whether they're a blend, whether they're environmental, consult widely and deliberately solicit dissenting views, being aware that one of the strategies of extremist dissenters is not to participate so that they can complain about not having been consulted. Don't exclude people with special interests, whether they're commercial or otherwise, include them, but make the interests clear. And don't claim to know everything when some of the science is still beyond the frontiers of the known. And above all, don't do it in a comfortable closed room and emerge with a conclusion. Do it all openly. There are problems with this, because we need to recognize the fundamental distinction between a process in which science frames the stage and the uncertainties, and the conflicting problem that some of the actors that will then participate in the democratic drama of choice come to it with immutable beliefs or values that no experiment, no apodictic scientific truth will contradict. The most important science that humanity needs to understand better is the social sciences. These are the things that are impeding our actions. And it's against that background that I think we celebrate the European Academy's Science Advisory Council. Its origins go back a full century. Interestingly, the first attempt that I'm aware of to bring the world's academies together came out of Vienna in the 1880s, where they got together with the Länder, the academies in what is now Germany, in what they called, and we use it in a different context, a cartel. And they invited the Royal Society to join, and the Royal Society, I am pleased to say, said, only if our traditional friends, the French, are also invited. That never really cohered, although in a sense it has left us the legacy of many interesting things that brought fostered collegial relations among institutions. In particular, ICSU, the International Council of Scientific Unions, does that, and within the EU, before EASAC, we had ALEA and we had the Academia Europea that helped forge the mutual acquaintances and the awareness of each other that we built the European Academy Science Advisory Council on. It's still a project in being. We are learning by doing, but I will end on a very cheerful note. This afternoon, the constituent academies all met, in a program of discussion and speakers. It's 3 hours. It is the first time in my long, lucky, and varied life that I have attended a set of speeches and talks where every speaker finished either on time or before time. A remarkable collection of people. And as indicated by that particular datum, a set of people who are interested in what they're doing rather than themselves.